Every Woman is a feminist show that highlights the struggles, triumphs, and accomplishments of women and girls and the men who support them. Every Woman includes a rich intersection of female voices that represent a wide range of ethnicities, social and economic status, as well as political and spiritual beliefs, with the purpose to enact social, political, environmental, and economic change. The views and opinions expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and the guests and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, KKFI staff, board, or management.
Good afternoon, KKFI listeners, and welcome to this week's edition of Every Woman. I am your faithful board operator and engineer here in the world headquarters in Studio A at KKFI. Rachel, joining me via the miracle of the internet and Zoom are my co-host Una and Fiona. Hi, Una.
Hello there. I'm glad to see you holding down the fort, and thanks to Zoom, I can watch everything that you're doing right now.
I know, and I'm surrounded by cameras. It's like, yes, I feel very comforted by that fact.
You call it our world headquarters at 39th and Main.
Well, yes.
I guess it is our world headquarters, right?
It is our headquarters, right?
Exactly.
And we exist in the world.
Headquarters.
We do have a world audience. I always love that intro by Kamal Mahajan, where she is reciting a little poem in Marathi language. Kamal came into the studio. She works with me, actually, at my day job, and I came in for a tour, and I asked her to record a promo. And she had that saying just ready to go, and she got it on the very first take. She's really shy and was terrified, and she just pulled it right through. And she sometimes even streams from Pune, India. So we do have a world audience, so it is our world headquarters.
Very true. Awesome.
So today on Every Woman, we are going to talk about the subject of women with words, and we are going to speak with a local author, Starla Carr, who I found out just before the show was a former host of the 10th Voice here on 90.1 FM KKFI back in, I think she thought, the late 90s or so forth. So a veteran comes back as a guest, and she has also been a guest on Mark Manning's show as well. But we are here to talk to her, excuse me, about her latest book titled She Knows Angel, which is a dark LGBT thriller, as it's described. And let me read the quote from the back of the book before I introduce Starla. And the quote is, "Angel's shoulders are heavy with responsibility. She is doing her best to tread the dangerous waters in her life. Two foster homes later, she and her brother finally have a chance at a better life. She meets a former police officer in college, and their rocky friendship leads to a complex love affair. Obsessed with a mysterious journal that gives her insight to the future, Angel is many things to many people. She's a sister, a daughter, lover, and friend, but she is nobody's angel." Very enigmatic tag there for the book. So, Starla, welcome to Every Woman.
Hello, queens. I'm so excited to be with you today. Thank you for having me.
And it is just a thrill to have you. We love to highlight local authors and artists, and really doubly thrilled that you had the connection to being a dedicated volunteer of KKFI. So that is really incredible. I'll start out by, I want to ask you some of the basics. You know, what is your background? Or as Rachel calls it sometimes, your squiggly line story. How did you get to where you are right now in life?
Ooh, that's a real squiggly line. That's like a road map to nowhere. Anyway, let's see. As far as being an author, I literally was working at a job that I did not like. Mm-hmm. I was working at a group home, and my coworker is a super, super talented woman. And one day we were just sitting on the couch talking about how much we didn't like our job. And she asked me what I wanted to do. And I said, I want to be an author. I've written since I was young, like very young. I think I wrote my first like makeshift book when I was in like the fifth grade or something like that. So she said, well, be an author. She said, why are you here? Go be an author. And I said, I don't know how to become an author. I don't know what to do. And she said, that doesn't matter. Just write something, write it. And at her encouragement, I would go to the IHOP over there with my little IBM laptop. Mm-hmm. And I sat down and I did it. I wrote a whole book. And then through that process, I realized I can do this. Like, this is something I can actually do. And, you know, it kind of ebbed and flowed from there. I wrote the first book in 2009. And then I realized how much I didn't know about publishing. I was very green. I knew nothing. But I took a long time to learn. And then because some of the new platforms for authors are incredible and easy, I just kept rolling my work and kept writing. And next thing I know, now I have several books. And so it's been a interesting journey, but it all started with that conversation on the couch, you know, like, what do you want to do when you grow up?
I know that five of your books deal with poetry that you listed. So were you a poet before you started to write that first book?
Yes, I consider myself a poet foremost. Some of the older people may remember the Planet Cafe a long time ago in Kansas City. And there was an open mic night there. And the ladies who ran the open mic night was a very popular LGBTQIA spot. And they were so busy running the coffee shop, they said, hey, would you mind hosting the open mic? Because I was like there every open mic. And so I said, yeah, I'd love to. And so I had the opportunity to host there. And so I kept writing more poetry because sometimes people wouldn't show up. And so I had to fill the space.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, well, I can't keep reading the same 12 poems over and over again. So just that experience alone, I ended up with a whole notebook full of poetry. But yeah, I mean, back in the day, we had all kinds of poetry spots in KC. And, you know, on a weekend, I could go to a poetry slam or an event or an open mic night. And so I did a lot of that back in the, I'd say, same time, late 90s. But I do really consider myself a poet.
You also list, too, that you are a LGBTQIA activist, a mm-hmm. warrior of words. And, mm-hmm. You know, what got you started into activism in the community?
So background squirrel moment. I grew up in a very strict religious household. And in my early 20s, I was so done with religion that I said, I'm going out to seek out everything they told me not to do. And one of the ways, I was like, oh, they said, don't hang around with witches. Well, I'm going to go find some witches to hang out with. And, you know, part of that was like me coming out as a lesbian. And I said, I want to go hang out with other gay people and trans people. And so I started with the community center when it was down on Westport. Mm-hmm. And I started volunteering there. And because of that wonderful experience, I was able to meet so many people within the community. And it was literally like that moment where you go, oh, and then it's like, I found my people. It was so wonderful. And all of those people have motivated me to keep activism going, you know. So I worked with Passages, the youth group. You know, I've worked with
part of the Kansas City Anti-Violence Project, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I just kept things going, you know, as long as I could. And then, you know, I got super busy with my children and life, and I didn't have as much time to volunteer. But everything I write is for my community, everything. There are some components of things that I write that are more technical, but in my heart, I always want to write about queer characters, and I want to write about what my experience is like as a Black lesbian and other Black lesbians, even if it's fiction. So my poetry, everything that I do, and I pour my heart into it, it is, I really am a warrior with words, because I want to tell these stories. Because truth be told, if we don't tell it, nobody else is.
And I can sense a lot of that passion in your book that I just finished and that we're going to talk about. We have a short station break here that we're going to pause for and let Rachel hear from some folks and then come back and talk a little bit about your book. Thank you.
And welcome back to the Every Woman Show. Turn it back over to our amazing guest joining us via Zoom, Una and Fiona, and our guest, Starla.
Well, our guest, Starla Carr, of course. And so we've heard a bit about what has inspired you, Starla, to jump into the writing process, which is really, you know, a large number of people feel like they would like to write, but it is a scary process. It is sitting down, your mind may be flooded with ideas, but when you sit down and that blank page, so to speak, is in front of you, whether it's on a laptop or, you know, a real page, how do you get started? How do you just kick it off? Do you have a process for doing that?
I do have a process. Now, I'm going to tell you what I do, and then please don't do that. Because my process is cuckoo. And I don't mind being that weirdo, but I will give you a recommendation later of how you should do it. My process is absolute. I call it chaos in multitasking. So I've got my TV on. Usually I'm watching either the news or something like very depressing. And then I have my radio on YouTube, and I'm listening to one of my favorite, like, neo-soul artists or gospel. And then I have my laptop in front of me, and then my partner says something to me, and then I pet the dog, and then I write. So it is absolutely nuts, and I have no structure, and I just free write whatever comes to my head. But the reason why I kind of do it that way is because I'm a person that just is constantly inspired by other art. So I find art in everything. I find it in the news, and I find it in petting the dog, and I find it in music. And so it's those chaotic moments that my characters come to life. And then I think I pick and pull from whatever's going on around me. I probably could not... I don't write well in a nice, quiet environment. That being said, I do not recommend that anybody else do what I do. So I help mentor people, and I tell them to make an outline, to start off with an outline, because it's not easy to write through the chaos. And if you have just, and it doesn't have to be something super structured. I love sticky notes. So I tell people, if you have an idea, which all creative writers do this, you'll write on napkins, on the back of envelopes, anywhere that there's a space to write if an idea comes to you. So grab a handful of sticky notes and then write out just a couple sentences about what you want to write about, and then actually plan it out before you write. Because the problem with my chaotic multitasking is that at the end, the editing process is not fun. And then you have to go back and revisit every mistake you made.
That environment that you describe describes my studio to a T. whenever I'm doing a video project or I'm working on a lighting design, I will have a movie or like, for me, it's usually like a Star Trek rerun, something I've seen 1,000 times running, and then music playing. And then I'm trying to focus on editing. And yeah, I kind of get it. It's somehow it creates a, I don't know, like a Zen-like state, which when I do that in our house, my partner is exactly the opposite. A very creative jeweler, and she needs quiet and silence to work. So, yeah, we sort of retreat to separate ends of the house and do our thing.
And I don't think it's that rare either, because a lot of books that I've been reading lately, I'll see that in the author's note at the back or wherever they decide to stick it, they've actually got a playlist of this is the music I was listening to while I was writing this. And sometimes it's sort of thematically appropriate to the book, and sometimes it's just what music they really, really like and felt like listening to at the time.
So let's talk a little bit about the inspiration for She Knows Angel specifically. What I get the feeling, not knowing very much about you other than your bio, and I've never met you before, and I'm not accepting paid endorsements or anything, but I get the feeling that there is a very strong connection between parts of the character and yourself. Is that true?
In a way, yes, because every single character, whether it's male or female, whoever it is, they have some pieces of me in there. But the interesting thing is, I just really did this book to challenge myself, because I do write so much poetry and other, you know, other genres. I wanted to kind of go outside the box, and I heard something that was very interesting that really sparked this book, which was that in the LGBT community, QIA, let me not forget anyone, in our community, we have a tendency to not let the main characters be devious or bad or do bad things, because we have this notion that we always have to be perfect in the eyes of others so that people don't look down upon our community. And so in writing this book, I really wanted to challenge my characters to just be authentic to whoever the character was. I struggle with this as a writer because I'm also a minister, and I have trouble writing things that are just not nicey-nice. I mean, my activism, I don't have a problem with writing something that's like, you know, Black Lives Matter or, you know, I'm a Black lesbian, none of that. But romance and bad behavior really kind of bother me. And I just pushed myself out of that comfort zone and was like, let the characters do what they're going to do. And that's what I did.
Did you have any experiences with the foster care system? I was wondering, because that was a strong focus in the book.
I personally did not have any foster care issues, but I definitely had some abandonment issues. Mm-hmm. And my own father, who I absolutely adore, he passed away in 2003. He raised me as a single dad. And there were many moments in my life when he'd just take off, you know, because he had something to do and I wouldn't know where he was or when he was coming back. There was a moment in my young life where he was in the hospital and I was like 13. And this was, of course, way before cell phones and checking in with people on the internet. And I literally did not know if my father was dead or alive for days, and till finally I reached out and called my grandmother, who came to my rescue, because I was like, I don't know what I'm doing, I'm 13. So I did have some connection with the character as far as you know, feeling abandoned and just trying to navigate life when you're just thrust into a situation where you're on your own, but you have none of those skills to be on your own.
And I thought it looked like Rachel had a question that she was going to ask. I think I saw your hand up. No, she's shaking her head violently. Okay, that's okay, because I have lots of other things to talk about. You describe it as on the cover as a dark romance, and it does get dark, and it's really stunning how the book shifts gears all of a sudden. And I was wondering too about, I don't want to give too much away about the character of Angel, but it seems that the she's exhibits some non-neurotypical functions of counting things all the time, having if a number, I think the number 14 was a very lucky number for her, for instance, making sure that things are in the right order, obsessive cleaning and so forth, making sure things are straightened up. Like there's a scene where there's a pile of files on the desk of someone, and she's just resisting this urge to straighten all the files up. I think a lot of people out there would really identify with that feeling. I thought that was really strong. Does that draw from experience or the experience of some friends, perhaps?
I have been accused of being OCD, and I definitely am about some things, not nearly as severe as my character. But I think that we find comfort where we can. And I believe that for my character, her comfort is in some things that she does understand, because she doesn't understand her life. And so she's just trying to figure this thing out. But her comfort is, if I can clean, if I can count, those things bring me comfort. They bring my anxiety level down. And so that's why she continues to, and you'll notice that the less anxious she is, the less she's doing it.
That's true. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she has an incredible courage too. It's not just, I mean, I guess some could read it and say that she's just sort of snapped. But I think it's more than that. I think she's come to really understand, appreciate, and manifest her courage to right wrong, to fight injustice. Am I reading that right, do you think? Or
I think you're reading it spot on. You know, I know that when whoever reads a book is going to take away different things. And the multi-layered parts of this book, Angel is you'll notice the channel writing that she's doing. And that channel writing.
I was wondering what that was called.
Mm-hmm, which I've actually done and still do. So it's interesting. But that kind of gives her the permission that she's not going to get externally to behave badly. And so it's like, oh, I can blame it on this writing that's coming through. And you'll notice there are weird little messages in the writing that kind of give you the tiniest clue what she might do in the future. So, yeah, she was fun to write about.
It was fun. And there's of course, a lesbian romance part of the novel that is done, I think, very well, and it's very subtle. I mean, I've read several novels that say that they are a lesbian romance about this or that, but it's really just porn that has more of a setup to it. But this was the romance was much more romance and much more caring exhibited over a long period, and I like that. It wasn't just like I said, it wasn't just porn with a few plot points thrown on around it. So is that sort of your style of writing when it comes to, romantic topics?
Definitely. And that is I'm so glad you picked up on that. I'm so excited because the romance for me is supposed to be delicate, interwoven, and I mentor erotic writers, and I have absolutely no judgment for what a person writes, but I ask them to please don't give me one more heaving bosom or a ripped open shirt. Like, I can't take it. Give me something that is actually real and relatable. And so I am just overjoyed that you picked up on that, because that my editor and I had issues with what to call this genre.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to call it a sapphic thriller. And she goes, well, at first I wanted to call it a sapphic mystery. And she was like, no. Okay, so we'll go with a sapphic thriller. And she was like, you're closer. And then I wanted to throw in the romance, because Angel does find love with the character Vicky. And so you just kind of threw it all together, and I think it works.
I kind of would have thought that sapphic indicated that there was romance and told you the orientation of the romance. Because if there were a romantic, you wouldn't have put sapphic in there.
But right.
I love that labeling. I don't know why your editor was so against that option. And I love what Una calling out about your descriptions. I call amongst authors on Twitter, and so often you will see books written by males who appear to have never seen the female anatomy themselves.
No.
Think about a woman's breasts, their nipples were just wandering around the room like a cross-eyed person, and it's like, have you even seen a female? So you're like refreshing there.
Yeah, I don't think any of them have ever. Well, you know what? There's certain things we can't talk about on the air. and you know, it's sapphic is appropriate too, because it's from. I mean, the root of it is from Sappho, the lesbian poetess of 300 AD? Am I about right, or was it BC? But if you go to the Isle of Lesbos nowadays, people go there thinking it's a whole island run by, you know, women in love running around maypoles and stuff. It's just inhabited by a bunch of old squid fishermen. don't romance. I don't think you're really into squid fishermen, I guess. But So I wanted to know, too, because there is a horror aspect to it, in a way, to your book. And are there authors that you've read that inspire you in, I guess, in any way? But I was wondering, because of the way the second half of the book works out, I was wondering if you were really a follower of or inspired by any horror authors or dark authors.
Very little.
Okay.
I do like Stephen King. I do. But I actually follow him more for his advice to writers than I do for his books and movies.
Because I told everyone when we were looking at the book, I said, this reminds me of something Stephen King would have inspired. So
mm-hmm.
picked up on that. I don't know.
Yeah, you did pick up on that. I like him a lot because I consider myself that weirdo, and I am very proud of that label. And I just want to write stuff that is so bizarre. People go, what did she say that? Did I read that? I love that. And I love that he's not afraid to go there. But he also, if you look him up on a lot of like little talkie videos, he gives great advice to writers about how to open, about how to close your stories. And so I follow him a lot for his advice. Really, it's weird because I don't read or watch a lot of horror. It was just what the character, like I said, I have characters in my brain and I must let them do what they're going to do. And so that's what Angel needed to do. So I let her.
I like too that you, in writing the character of Angel, you avoid the trope that's called Chekhov's gun, which, you know, if there's a gun that's in a scene that's called out specifically, somehow someone is going to use it. But for instance, Angel is often tempted by drug use after a very initial, you know, that encounter in the car with her friend Nat, where she just has a little introduction, she's always being pestered about it. And you think, okay, here's where she's going to fall down that path or whatever, but mm-hmm. she doesn't. So Chekhov's gun gets left unused on the floor, I guess. And I like that because it's not falling into the trope. You really put some thought into this, despite you describing how chaotic your writing process was. It's clear that your intent for the characters and how they were going to act was actually very, you know, despite some of the things that Angel does at the end, which are pretty much out of the ordinary, she's a real character.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. She's very real and very believable. Her grandmother May is very believable as a grandmother, and, you know, her father. You expect that, you get this expectation that when she goes back to live with her father, that there's some deep, dark, hidden secret that will come out about the father himself. But the father's just a decent guy, working mm-hmm. hard, and, you know, was in a bad situation. It's so it's there's parts of it that really are out of the ordinary, the end parts, of course, and then there's parts that have very real characters. And how do you do that? How do you make that work that way?
Right. So I'll give you a little tidbit of this. I once watched this show called I Could Have Been Your Cellmate. It was hosted by the comedian Monique, and she interviewed these women in prison about why they were in prison and what happened and what got them there. And they are everyday people like you and I and every other woman. And they made a choice. They made a decision to do something that possibly landed them in prison, and they got caught. So in my character, Angel, as I was writing about her, like I said, it's not blazing in your face, I'm going to do something bad. It's more of, like I said, there's an internalness of things that she's holding on to, and a suffering and a pain that she has inside of her that she wants, like you said, it's to be the heroine. She wants to help. She's just really going about it in a terrible way. She does want to help. And I feel like internally we all have the ability to be really wonderful, awesome people. But we also, when we hold on to our pain, have the ability to be really awful and do very terrible things to hurt other people because, you know, we have to have skills and tools to help us deal when we're hurting. And when we don't, it manifests itself in some really uncool ways. So that's kind of how I incorporated into the story of her. I wanted people to get to like her. I wanted you to feel like I want this kid at my house. She's a sweet kid, you know, as she's growing up. And then as she moves into womanhood, then you really see her unfold. Like, she just does not have life skills because there was no one there to really teach her how to be a woman and how to live life. And so she's kind of writing the rules herself as she goes. And I enjoy that about her.
You also put a bit of Kansas City flavor into the book because it takes the latter two-thirds, three-quarters of it takes place in Kansas City. And you don't go into a huge amount of detail describing the city or, you know, recognizable parts of it. But the feel for how you describe the neighborhoods and the people and the climate really resonated with me. I said, this is Kansas City. There was one phrase you used in the book. I wrote it down when I saw it because I thought it was very, if you wrote this, I'm really impressed. If you borrowed it, I'm still impressed. You wrote, and I quote, "Summertime and fall were lovers always upset with each other. One day the heat would be barely tolerable and the next bitterly cold," unquote. And that exactly describes Kansas City. Did you write that?
I did write that.
That is a really great turn of phrase. I'm going to steal that, although I'll take the credit you with.
Please do. That's my poeticness coming out.
Yes.
You know, because in my mind, I still am a poet, even when I write fictional novels. And so I try to sneak in pieces of my poetry into the writing, but not overwhelm it, because I like to get through the story. And if I just keep being flowery and, you know, poetic, we'll never get there. So I just sneak pieces like that in sometimes, and I'm so glad you enjoyed it, because I agree, that is Kansas City.
And I mentioned to Fiona before, just before this interview, I said, you know, I really can see now, looking at all the poetry that you'd written, that kind of explains the, I guess, the meter of the writing in this story. Some authors write extremely long sentences, like William Faulkner can spend half a page on a single sentence, but mm-hmm. your sentences are very to the point, but flow together. And it reminded me of poetry that was being put down as prose, and mm-hmm. I wondered if that was on purpose or just part of your natural style.
Mm-hmm. I think it is part of my natural style, because I do think in cadence, even when I'm writing.
Mm-hmm, yes.
So, yeah, it is definitely a part of that. And it that's why I said this book really challenged me, because I want to write it like a poem. And then sometimes, to be perfectly honest, when I wrote the book and was getting ready to hand it over to my editor, I reread it. And I had to scrap the first two chapters. It broke
really?
My heart. I started off earlier in her life. And then I was like, this is dragging the story down, because it took too long to get to where we needed to go. And so I had a conversation with my partner, who also does many editing projects for me. And she said, you're going to have to utilize flashbacks. You got to get rid of that. And I did. And it was, because I was going, oh, you know, on a beautiful day, and blah, 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 and waxing poetic, when I know my readers, because I was impatient with it. I'm like, what is she going to do? Get to it. So it broke my heart, but I had to scrap two chapters and just work it out.
So I wanted to ask one question about your other upcoming work, your Sapphic mm-hmm. Island series. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So this story has been with me pretty much almost 20 years. I was in a really bad relationship. Things were not going well. Mm-hmm. And you know how you go to a therapist and they tell you to find your happy place? So Sapphic Island was my imaginary happy place. And there was this beautiful island full of women and love and healing. And so in my brain, when I was stuck at home with my ex, who I did not want to be there with, I was imagining this place in my head. And so 20 years later, here I am actually writing the Sapphic Island series. I introduced the character Jada Carter, and she goes on this healing physical, mental, spiritual journey. And she's taking a bunch of other friends with her. And it is rich in lesbianness. It is just rich in lots of very colorful women of every background. And you actually get to meet Angel and Vicky again on Sapphic Island. So it's kind of a fun, twisted up thing, but the basic premise of the series is Jada Carter is an author, and she finds out that she has a very serious health problem. And in a series of dreams, she comes to know this island, and her dreams, little bit at a time, become reality. And she's pulling all of these women in with her. And then, of course, there's some craziness that happens, because you need some deliciousness in a book. So she's a character you're probably going to love to hate. She's a lot of fun, but she's also, she's not the kind of woman you'd ever want to date or take seriously. But she's a lot of fun. And so I am working on that. The first book is done. I'm just waiting on my editor to finish. And then I'm working on book 2 and 3 like simultaneously. So This series is going to be lots of fun. Yeah.
Rachel tells me we need to take our final station break for the hour. Then when we come back, I want to ask you, Rachel had a question about channel writing. Then I want to ask you a little bit about the consulting that you do to help other writers and how people can get in touch with you. So everyone out there in Radioland, stay tuned.
And welcome back to the Every Woman program and our conversation with Starla Carr. So, Starla, I wanted to circle back to something you mentioned earlier about channel writing. It appears in the book, and then you said you actually do it yourself. Could you explain what that is exactly?
Mm-hmm. I consider channel writing a gift, a spiritual gift. In different cultures and in different societies, it's different for everybody. But for me, when I am writing, especially poetry, there are times when I write something and it is authentic, 100% me. It is my style. It is my voice. It is my cadence. And then there are times when I sit down to write something and I'm just kind of free writing. And when I get done and I read it, I know that what I wrote did not come from me. And a lot of people have been nervous or scared about channel writing because it does sound kind of out there. But if you ever pick up any of my poetry books, I think you'll be able to see the difference because I have my own unique style of writing. And it is, to me, a combination of, you know, blackness, queerness. It's kind of a throwback to the Harlem Renaissance era style. And then sometimes I write things and I go, I didn't write that. That's not me. Or I go, whoa, that's really good. So, yeah, I definitely know I channel write. It's not that I'm singing spirit or anything like that, but my hand is literally being controlled from an unseen force. And then I read it and go, whoa, okay.
I guess that's why we have editors.
As long as it doesn't tell you to like go hang out down at the airport naked, it's probably
you don't have to do what they tell you to do.
I've got a story about that one.
I think that was Ambien.
That might have been. So I want to talk briefly about, you mentioned that you were starting a business to try to help new writers. So would you like to tell a little bit about that and how also people can get in touch with you if they want to learn more about your work and also about how they could get some help from you on writing?
Absolutely. So first of all, I started ghostwriting for people. It's been about 6 years now, and it just kind of evolved, as most things do. So I wrote a book for a friend, and then she told a friend, hey, she's really good at this. You should get her to help you with your book. And then she told a friend. And this year, I actually rolled it into a business because I've kind of been freelancing now for about 5-6 years. And so my business is Blue Notebook Publishing Consultant. And basically, I give the tools to creative people and people who want to write books to get you from point A to point B. There's many tiny little stumbling blocks to publishing, and I can kind of smooth out that process for people, whether it is actual ghostwriting, where you just tell me your thoughts and I write it, or if it's mentorship, as you are doing the writing and I'm helping you develop the book as we go. So I have a ton of little services that I offer, and I mainly work with mostly marginalized authors and writers. Mm-hmm. And so I've tried to keep everything as streamlined, efficient as possible. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. And I'm very proud to say that up until now, I think we're at close to 20 book products that I've helped people publish.
That's incredible. So, wasn't Angel's notebook that she wrote in, wasn't it blue colored?
Yes.
I caught that. Yes, I did. So how can folks get in touch with you to learn about everything that you do, not just your books, but also, your service to help other writers.
Absolutely.
What's the best way to get in touch with you?
I am still addicted to Facebook. Even though I have an Instagram, I don't recommend anybody do anything with me on there. I'm kind of old school. So you can find me at Author Starla Carr, and it's Carr with two R's on Facebook. Mm-hmm. You can also find me at Blue Notebook Publishing Consultant, and that is my business page. Both of those are my business pages on Facebook. I do have an Instagram where it's author_Carr, but I'm rarely on there. I got to get better at social media. I'm so old lady-ish when it comes to that. I don't want to go. I don't want to go away from Facebook.
I understand completely. But unfortunately, we have to go away from our lovely conversation with you because we've hit the end of the show. I really want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts, Starla, for giving us an insight into your creative world and your creative process and letting us read your latest book. And she knows Angel. And we also have information for how to reach Starla on our Every Woman page on kkfi.org. If you weren't able to write everything down, or you can send it in. Rachel, do you have anything that you want to close out the show with?
No, I just want to thank Starla so much, and I really enjoyed the book. It was a wonderful read, so thank you so much for being on our show. I will tell you, and our audience, thank you so much for joining us this week on Every Woman. Coming up next is Urban Connections. We will see you next week.